All right, folks. Sorry, Mr. Lucy. Let's get back into this risk policy. We have a presentation from Jonathan to walk us through the risk policy again. Keep in mind, at the end of this, we will be closing the meeting, and you will actually be doing your homework of doing your weightings before you can actually leave today. I asked our two attorneys to be our proctors for this, but they prefer to leave early as well. So, so I'll kick it over to you, Chair Ware.
Thanks. We had our last risk policy work group meeting on June 3rd, and I'll just pass it up to Jonathan, given the.
Yeah, good afternoon, everyone. So while we're getting slides on the board, Jonathan Peros, council staff, have worked on, supported the risk policy working group for the last 3.5 years. Here today to talk about revisions to the risk policy concept that the council approved back in September of 2024. We thought it would be appropriate to focus a little bit on why we're here today, what we're looking to do, and I wanted to start with the why because I think it's fairly important context. So over a 2-year period, the risk policy working group reviewed the council's original risk policy and the subsequent roadmap, and it found that revisions were needed. That initial risk policy was deemed to be too broad, difficult to implement. There were increasing remands by this council to the SSC. There was a lack of resources to match the vision of using management strategy evaluations for many of the council's resources, managed resources, and the council's operating in a changing environment. Where we're at now is that the council has approved the new risk policy concept. We're using it, but it's sort of the same way that we use the old risk policy concept. We're generating risk policy matrices, we're bringing them to the SSC, and we're bringing them to the council. And so today's proposed revisions will change that. We're looking for the council to accept the recommendations of the working group, and really allow for the operationalization of the risk policy concept. And you know, this is important because it's going to bring forward your policy preferences earlier in the process into an assessment of risk. The plan teams will see it, the SSC is going to see it, and it's an avenue to directly consider climate and ecosystem considerations that don't always get picked up in stock assessments, social and economic impacts, along with those biological considerations. And so a lot of work has gone into this over the last year, thinking about revisions and how to take this from the concept and the initial sort of ideas that we had about the risk policy into a tool that can be implemented for 2027. So it's going to take 2 days. This is part one of the report. And I'm going to be reviewing recommendations from the working group. Today, we're going to ask the council to take final action to approve the revised concept and eventually sunset the risk policy working group. We'll be presenting some information about your weightings process. We'll go through some instructions, question and answer that everyone will be able to listen to. And then I think it really is an administrative action, having the council go through the weightings process in a closed session. And so we'll really try to handle any questions and any comments about weightings before moving into that closed session. Tomorrow, we want to talk to you about what the results of the weights are. We're going to go through, show the council what the weights looked like across the board. There'll be a motion put up for the council to consider to approve those weights, and that will be the time for the public and for the council to discuss the motion and to really, I think, get into some of the details of what that could look like. On both days, you're going to get a demonstration of the risk policy toolkit. So this is a piece of software that has been developed by Angelia Miller, who's been a contractor with us on this project, that's used to support the plan teams to generate risk policy matrices, to calculate Z-scores, and to apply risk tolerance tiers that I'll get into in a little more detail. So I wanted just to start with an overview of the risk policy working group because they've worn a lot of hats over the past 3.5 years. They've been reviewers, they've been innovators, they've been data analysts, and a lot of people can have contributed to the overall effort to update the council's risk policy and then agreed to stick around for another 16 months to get us here to build the second piece of it. So I want to recognize Dr. Kate O'Keefe, Mr. Rick Belvance, Ms. Sheree Patterson, Dr. Lindsay Williams as past members of the working group, Angelia Miller and Dr. Roger Brothers from the University of Maine, the council staff who have supported this, and particularly Andy Applegate. And I want to thank the council, the SSC, the CESC, all groups that have provided input on the concept over time. I think we've arrived with a better product today to recommend to you because of that interest, because of those questions, and because of the input. And we've really tried to think about what you've told us and incorporate it into the recommendation you'll get today. So checking in on our work against the risk policy objectives, I think the revisions achieve the objectives that were approved in 2024. So it's a product that's flexible and transparent and can be broadly implemented. It identifies things that the council wants to use to characterize risk, and for each of these factors, it wants to look at policy preferences and key data. It considers stability and social impacts, a changing environment, and the life history of managed species, and it's producing both qualitative and quantitative outcomes. Where this goes next is a connection to ABC control rules that are being developed in Framework 68, and you heard about those from Mr. Grant a little earlier today. So you've seen a version of this slide before. This equation is really the engine that runs the council's risk policy concept. Weights, which are policy preferences of the council, get combined with scores that are based on data that are generated by the plan development team. This is done for a series of factors, which are elements that are used to characterize risk. And the weights and scores for each factor are aggregated into a Z-score. What is new for today is that Z-score now translates to a level of risk and recommended probability that can be considered in decision making. And so that's really the leap from April to June of this year. So the council agreed to trim the number of factors that would be utilized in the risk policy down to 5. So as previously mentioned in April, we're focused on SSB stock status, recruitment, climate vulnerability, and commercial and recreational fishery characterization. And I'll talk about the commercial and recreational fishery characterization in more detail as we had promised to do back in April. Those are places where we've made some updates to the concept. So this is an overview of the steps that we use in the risk policy concept, and it covers the relationship with ABC control rules. The risk policy is a tool that is distinct and separate from ABC control rules, as Mr. Grant noted. The risk policy has the ability to integrate with those. That's been considered in Framework 68. And in 2026, we're really going to focus on what is in the white box. We're taking the 4 steps that lead to a qualitative output for risk tolerance. We're not proposing to do any of the things that Mark talked about in Framework 68 and link this with groundfish control rules or any control rules for that'll be used in specifications later on this year. So I presented steps 1 through 3 on 2 slides ago. As I mentioned, the recent innovation is in step 4, and that's translating the Z-score, putting it together with the risk policy curve that we talked about in April, into a level of risk tolerance. So how the risk policy is being proposed for use in 2026 is to generate more information and to bring it forward as standardized outputs. So we'd continue to provide a risk policy matrix, which is pretty similar to what folks saw in 2025 that got updated from the original version of the first risk policy. But what is new is this level of risk tolerance, and that's shown in the upper right-hand box there. It's the stoplight approach of red, yellow, green, low, intermediate, and high risk tolerance. These are qualitative tiers that are would be considered as part of existing council processes. So both the matrix and the risk tolerance would be intended to inform decision making, but they don't drive decision making. They're not in, they would not box the council into any decisions that it doesn't want to make. It's more information as part of an existing process. So the council would continue to use the current ABC rules as it has been. The risk policy is not integrated with harvest control rules, as I mentioned already, and we just want to be crystal clear about that point and set expectations for how this could be used this year with four different specification actions. And to give you a sense of what the process would look like over the rest of this year, this is really what it would look like for groundfish, scallops, and small mesh, which would where the SSC is considering OFL and ABC recommendations in October. We're expecting the council to do the weighting this afternoon. The plan teams would do scoring over the summer that leverage the online toolkit. There'd be this output of risk tolerance, and then that information goes forward to the SSC, and the SSC would be applying the current ABC control rules. No changes to those control rules, just more information for the council to think about, for the SSC to think about. And so in terms of what that's going to look like and what the toolkit is going to look like, we have a short video that I believe Angelia will start for us. So if you're Terry Alexander and you're not thinking about fish finding each other or eating, and you find yourself on the World Wide Web and you want to know what the risk tolerance will be for Gulf of Maine haddock, you can go to the portal and you can select three different dropdowns, and this information will be available on demand. And so there'll be a live forward-facing portal interface for members of the public to be able to access information that's being generated by the risk policy, and so that's going to live online. There's also an ability to generate reports from the portal, which is shown on the right-hand side. And so there you're able to see the scores, the weights, the risk, the Z-score, the risk tolerance, and the stoplight plot. So a couple different ways to share that information, but I think really exciting in having this capacity for both the public to directly engage with the risk policy, but also to have this programmed back end for the plan development teams to be using. Okay. So now we're at where we left off in April. So of the four steps that we use to generate a risk tolerance and implement risk policy, there was a couple things we want to focus on with regard to weighting, scoring, and qualitative use. So I'll take those in turn. The slides are numbered according to the four steps. But we've spent the last year really focusing on trying to operationalize the risk tolerance concept. What does it mean to get a Z-score? What is the council supposed to do with that? And so we're going to get there, and we're going to show you how, but we want to step through both a weighting decision and some scoring guidance before we get to that final piece. So I'll start with the weighting process, and I'm going to review some of this once we get through a short demo and a consideration of a motion. But as a reminder, again, this is a policy choice by council members. Where we've landed is that there'll be one weight per factor for all council-managed resources. So the weight that you apply for each of the five factors will get applied to all stocks and species that are under the council's management. We're going to do it on paper in a little bit. And you know, the reason for that is we want this to be an anonymous process for council members, and so you'll be handed a folder with a number on it. The piece of paper inside should have the corresponding number, but it's a chance for you to weight these however you want to, and your responses will not be linked back to you as an individual member, but we're going to share the aggregate results with the public and with the full council. This time, only voting council members are going to participate. I think last time when we did the trial or the mock exercise, everyone around the table was invited. We're going to shorten the guest list. This time we will we're going to proposing a change so that you can only weight two factors as critically important. And the reason for this is when we did this last time, there were seven factors and you could weight three factors as critically important. We still think it's important to try to differentiate between and make some choices between the level of importance with the factors. And we want to keep the ratio of the number of times you could do that the same. And so that's why we've moved from 3 to 2 as a recommendation for this go around. The weights are averaged and then they get normalized, and we can talk through that process a little more tomorrow. And we're going to use a council motion to approve the weights. On the scoring side, a lot more detail and a lot more information is contained in Appendix 1, and this gives specific guidance for each of the factors. Scoring gets done by the plan development teams. It's intended to be replicable and formulaic. We're asking the plan teams to adhere to guidelines. We want to do this because, especially in this first time through, we want to learn if there's any adjustments that need to be made based on that experience that everyone is having. We want people to have the same experience as they go through the scoring process. There is some criteria for deviating from scoring procedures and then documenting that justification. And I can give some examples if folks are curious about that. But we are looking to the plan teams to provide expert opinion and recommendations. And if they have alternate ways of thinking about this, to share those and to document them. So you've seen this risk policy scoring matrix for all five factors before. It hasn't changed since April. The range of factor scores can go from -4 to 4, with positive numbers suggesting more risk tolerance and negative numbers suggesting less risk tolerance. I said we'd get into commercial and recreational fishery characterization, so I'll take a couple minutes on this slide. The working group has been focused on finalizing the recommendations for this factor. And it really wasn't about which questions to ask, but what is the underlying data that's used to go through answering the questions and doing the scoring. So the way the factor works is that there's five questions that the plan development team is going to answer. It's around resource utilization, fishing communities, revenue, fishery interactions, and advisory panel input. Answers to each of the questions will translate to a point. So it could be -1, 1, or 0. And then the sum of those points are the score for this factor. So, and you can't go above 0, or can't go below 0, or above 4. I want to go through each of the questions sort of quickly and just describe what data is being considered. So for resource utilization, we're really thinking about how much is the fishery landing relative to the landing limit. And so for some fisheries, this might be looking at utilization of the TAL. For others, it might be the commercial sub-ACL. For scallops, it would be the annual projected landings. It's fishery specific, and we're using an 80% threshold. We want to know how consistently has the fleet harvested greater than 80% of the limit, and then there's a score assigned with that. For fishing communities, this probably got the most attention over by the working group. Where we landed on how to kind of go through the scoring for this question was to use an output from the State of the Ecosystem Report. So it's the Port Community Fishing Activity Indicator. But what I want the council to know is, and why we landed here, was that this casts a fairly wide net in terms of topics or interest that I think are relevant to fishing communities. So it's not just landings, it brings in the number of dealers, it brings in the number of active permits, revenue, and combines all into one question and one indicator. And so for fishing communities, that's where we landed, was to leverage some work that was done in the State of the Ecosystem Report. Revenue was something we'd look at, normalizing the dollars over time. fishery interactions. So this is whether or not a stock is impacting harvest of other stocks and other fisheries, and that could be because there's an AM associated with an overage. It could be because it's a choke stock, and we'd look to the plan teams to help answer that question and provide their expert opinion. And then finally, advisory panel input. And so we want the advisory panels to review the results of these scores, and then to advise if the if the condition still holds, or if there are new circumstances in the fishery that need to be considered, and that gets scored as a zero or a one. So on the recreational fishery characterization, different set of questions, but it's the same overall concept. So five questions get used. There's points associated with each of them. Where we've landed for this factor in 2026 is that initially scoring is going to focus on recreational stocks with a sub ACL. And for the New England Council, that means cod and haddock. For stocks like scallops that don't have a recreational fishery, they don't have a recreational permit, they don't get scored. We know there are stocks that are recreationally targeted and harvested, like pollock, like redfish, and we want to pursue ways to integrate those into scoring and be able to apply the recreational fishery characterization for those stocks over time. We're not there in 2026, and we want to continue to give that some more thought. It's something that the working group did try to incorporate, but I wanted to acknowledge that we know it's not up or down, that there are stocks that don't necessarily have the full suite of management measures that the council uses for cod and haddock, but should still be considered in the near term. So the questions here focus on sub ACL utilization for cod and haddock, and that's based on year-end catch accounting. Questions 2 and 3 leverage outputs from the State of the Ecosystem report around effort and fleet diversity. Question 4 is about MRIP data quality. That comes from the Northeast Center. And question 5 is about engagement with the RAP. So the same concept that we have with the commercial fishery characterization, about asking, looking at the scores, do those conditions hold, and advising on any changes. So engagement with the industry. So now moving into use. So by weighting and scoring, we'll get the Z-score. We're going to come up with a number. But as I mentioned, for the better part of this entire process, we arrived at the Z-score, and it was sort of, so what? What are we supposed to do with this number? And I think we have an answer now. The objective of this tier design is to have a structured way to interpret risk policy outputs into management decisions. And so the focus here is really a qualitative application. As I mentioned, this is a stoplight approach, red, yellow, green, and we're binning outputs as low, intermediate, and high risk tolerance. You sort of saw some of that in the presentation Roger Brothers gave back in April. The design and the width of the tiers are really intended to follow the shape of the logistic curve. So the working group spent a lot of time thinking about an appropriate shape of the curve. That was presented back in April, and now we've overlaid these tiers. We're focused on having low and high risk tolerance in places where the curve is relatively stable, the flatter areas of the curve, and then intermediate risk tolerance. That band changes over at the place where the greatest change in slope of the curve, both around high risk tolerance and low risk tolerance. And so how do we use this, and what do the tiers mean? And I want to start with the recommended probability that's on the y-axis. So the x-axis is the z-score, and I think it's fairly intuitive. If you're at a 4, you're in this high risk tolerance area. If you're at a negative number, then you're in low risk tolerance, but that gets applied to the curve, and then it corresponds to a place along the y-axis as well, and that's our recommended probability. And this is the level of confidence that a management decision or specification is going to lead to a desired outcome. and we framed it between 50% and 100%. So that runs from the odds of essentially a coin toss to near certainty, and those align with the risk tolerance tiers. So the low risk tolerance tier is really characterized by, you know, a stock that has poor recruitment, it has low stock size, it's going to be highly vulnerable to environmental change. It's call for precaution in a management decision. And we also think it's a call for frequent check-ins to make sure that that information is representative of the state of that resource. The intermediate risk tolerance, this is really calls for balancing economic stability and biological sustainability. We're looking to avoid abrupt regulatory shifts. We think that most of the council managed resources will likely fall into this tier. They'll have different levels of recommended probability, obviously. And then for high risk tolerance, this gets applied when conditions are favorable, when a stock is above its target reference points, when there might be several years of strong cohorts, it has low climate vulnerability, but that's also a place to check in frequently, knowing that the council is more risk tolerant in those scenarios. The last thing I want to say is that the risk policy is generating essentially three outputs in this final product. We have the Z-score, which we've had, we have the recommended probability, and we have risk tiers. And I think each is important, each can be considered, and interpretation is going to take judgment by council members. So you'll be asked to approve the Risk Policy Working Group's recommendations later today. As I've mentioned already, 3.5 years of the working group reviewed the original risk policy, recommended a new concept, spent over a year working on the concept that's been presented today. And upon approval of that, whenever that happens, Dr. O'Keefe's looking to give folks a break from this. The working group will have fulfilled the terms of reference and would be sunset. And so there was a memo that was sent in late May to the working group about this. Whenever the council revises the concept, is ready to implement, even in a qualitative way, the risk policy, the working group would be sunset. So at this point, I think there's a lot of value in testing it out and using the tool, especially this year. This is not a set it and forget it project by any means. There's continued communication about the tool that's going to be supported by the Climate and Ecosystem Steering Committee, and they've already been engaged in that. We know new data is coming forward, so climate vulnerability analysis 2.0 that would replace the Hare et al. 2016 work is something that we think will come online later this year. There will be updates to the State of the Ecosystem report. The data in the risk policy will not be stagnant. It will get updated. Bigger changes to the risk policy, like changing the number of factors, would need to be identified as priorities for the council to work on, and we would expect that a FMAT-type group would be stood up to support those technical revisions to the risk policy. I think we've asked a lot of the working group, as I mentioned, to do a lot of different things. At this point, it would be appropriate to pivot and engage folks who would be really, really focused on adjustments to in within the concept itself. So the final product that was shared in the binder for this meeting, it contains several things, and I just want to orient folks to what you're being asked to approve today. It's the risk policy statement and concept. A lot of this hasn't changed since September of 2024. The purpose, the four strategic initiatives, the needs and benefits of the risk policy, the stability statement are all the same. We're describing the concept differently because we're proposing a qualitative approach. We have, I think, some adjustments to the process roles and responsibilities. One thing that is new is are the appendices, and we're trying to be really do a good job of documenting what the process should be for scoring, for weighting, and the use guidance. We've documented the equations and can and trying to sort of show what's under the hood in terms of both the risk policy curve as well as the Z-score calculation. And so that's in the mechanics appendix, and then a decision catalog. And this was conceived because we've had so many good ideas and so many good suggestions about what the risk policy could focus on. We couldn't do all of it, and that's been a place to catalog those ideas and to be able to tap later on when the council wants to revisit the risk policy. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Peros. And I also do want to thank my fellow working group members. We put a lot of effort in. When I signed up for this 3 years ago, I didn't think I'd be here 3 years later finally approving it, but I think we got a good product out of this. So this is your opportunity. We will be having a motion shortly to whether to approve or not this concept moving forward. So this is your opportunity for final questions on how we on the presentation of what risk policy means and the scoring. So I will open it up to the council. Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Jonathan. And thanks for walking me through this again last Friday, because I was overwhelmed. So the slide with the 80% on it under the commercial and recreational, actually, the same question goes for it. Utilization, I mean, if you looked at, say, our Whitehake information from 10 years ago, we were only utilizing 50% of it, right? Now, in the fleet is shrunk down by 50%. And now 50% of the fleet is catching 90, 95% of it. Would we be basing our scoring on old quotas, new quotas, or as a relative term? So I'm just trying to figure out how to do the scoring.
Yeah, thanks, Terry. Great question, and I didn't address this. So the focus is on recent fishery performance. So we're looking at the last 3 years of information, and if two of those years the fishery has landed more than 80% of its landing limit, then it would receive a 1 point there. So that's true for all stocks. The one other thing I want to say about this is that this is a place where we feel like it's important to use the most recent information. So sometimes the year-end catch reports can be a little delayed in terms of when they become available. And so it's not just going to those. There's an opportunity for the plan teams to use the quota monitoring page and quota monitoring, you know, that's happening and being done by GARFO. So, you know, I think this is a place where the risk policy can, I think, be a little more current in terms of its evaluation of the fishery.
Thank you.
And I also want to point out, so we did throw in that last question there, the advisory panel input. That actually speaks to real time. Like, so what Jonathan talked about is we're looking back in very recent past. But that question is going to be real time. What are you seeing now? What have you seen this past fishing year? So it's an opportunity to not only look at history, recent history, but what's actually occurring. And that applies to both the commercial characterization, but also the recreational characterization as well. Other questions from the council? Mr. Pierdnock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Jonathan, Megan, and all of you that worked in this the past 3 years. It's a lot of work, and it is good to see. I do have some questions, though, that, as you've noted, that the only two species that are recreationally evaluated are the sub-ACLs for cod and haddock. We have pollock, we have redfish, we have winter flounder, we have halibut, we have cusk, we have hake. I could... There's more that are recreational fish. The fact that isn't in this weighting, how does this then work? That you let's use Pollock, for example. You would take this, you go in, and from a commercial standpoint, you evaluate it, you get your criteria, you come up with your number, then that goes to the SSC. Yet there's nothing there recreationally for the SSC to take into consideration. That's where I'm kind of need an explanation or finding a disconnect, because there is a disconnect here. And I know you're not there yet, but how is that going to be handled now or the future as examples of these other species other than cod and haddock with a sub-ACL?
We're actually there, and I'll turn it to Jonathan to explain how we'll hand for stocks that don't have a recreational component.
Yeah, I hope I got this answer right. Great point, Mike. And I know we've talked about this, and I want we want to get there. I think we recognize that this is important. So, in the short term, in 2026, there's no score applied for the recreational fishery characterization for a stock like pollock. And so, in that case, there's essentially four factors that go into generating the risk tolerance. I don't think that precludes the plan team or the SSC or the council from considering recreational catch information as part of its overall decision making. And so I think it can be very clear that the risk tolerance output that you're seeing only captures four of the factors at this time. There, I think you can share what the pollock harvest had been and whatever information is available from a recreational perspective as part of our usual process. So I don't think that the risk policy and going to this qualitative tiered approach isn't meant to sideline any information. I think it's just meant to have another piece of information. In this case, it doesn't explicitly capture this specific questions that we have for the recreational component. I do think that there's some overlap between what questions we've asked on the commercial side with what is relevant for recreational as well. But the process is not designed to sideline anything on the rec side. I think we just need to be clear about what is in and what is out.
Ms. Ware?
Maybe just to add, I think the risk policy matrix is another aspect of this, and that will still be completed for all species, including pollock. So that has information that would pertain to those stocks or the recreational catch, et cetera, et cetera. So that is going before the SSC. That will be information they have. But I agree with Jonathan. At this point, the rec factor for pollock, as an example, would not be increasing or decreasing your risk tolerance.
You good, Mike?
No, thank you. As you said, this is an evolution and evolving. So we'll just have my concerns, and I think you've adequately responded to it, but I'm still concerned, and I just hope positively for the future. Thank you.
Always think positive for the future. Thank you. Mr. Platts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification, John, on Terry's question. You said, so if you caught 80% of the ACL, you would grade that as it would be a 1 for low stress. Did I catch that right, or maybe I didn't hear right?
So you'd get a point, and you have up to 5 points with this particular factor. It wouldn't just be a 1, so it would be cumulative with the answers to the rest of the questions. So if you caught 80% of the limit and it was a choke stock for other species, and with the fishing community question that gets scored as a 1, you're already at a 3. So it's part of the overall score. Each of these questions is a piece of the overall score for commercial fishery characterization.
Ms. O'Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Jonathan, for all the work that you guys have done on this. And the documents, the appendix, are very helpful to walk us through the process. I just was curious, and I know this is not, we're going to be making a weighting and policy decision as a council, so this goes a little bit more to the scoring of the PDT. And I'm just curious on recruitment. Some of our assessments are not so robust, and sometimes we don't have information on recent or future recruitment. So in those situations for certain stocks and FMPs, will that be something in scoring that would be like maybe something that's not scored, just kind of get received, the PDT would give it a neutral score, or something that wouldn't be weighted heavily when factored in eventually? I'm just curious, and we don't measure for, we don't have specific process for measuring recruitment for some of these stocks, so or have problems with them. So I'm just curious how that process would work on the PDT level.
It's a great point. Thank you for bringing it up. So as you mentioned, there's for analytical assessments, there's usually an estimate of recruitment. For model free and empirical stocks, what we've encouraged the plan team to do is to review available time series of information. So you could look at a young of the year indice or age one indice to try to understand if there have been recent cohorts in that fishery. And so there is an opportunity for the plan teams to look at an alternative source of information that may have been gathered if the data is there, right? I think that's a fair point too. There might be missing information. The plan team's gonna need to sort that out and make a recommendation, but there is an avenue to use data when it's there and to use those signals in the scoring.
Ms. Braun.
Thank you for the presentation, and all the questions about the scoring have gotten me a little bit confused now. We're not scoring today, right? We are just waiting. Okay, wanna make sure I got that, because I was like, oops. And we're not gonna be scoring. PDT is doing the scoring. Yes, okay. I'm good. Let's wait.
Let's vote first. sorry. I will go to the public. I know this has been a big topic, and I know there's been a lot of questions from the public as well. I will give the public one more opportunity to have some questions on how we move on, what the risk policy is going to look like in the future. Here in the room? Anyone online? Seeing none, Ms. Ware.
I think we are done with presentations, so we'll move on to the motion at this point, and I'll wait for that to be on the screen. All right, this will need a second. That the council approve the revised risk policy concept contained in document 3 under tab 15 of the meeting materials, effective immediately. Upon today's approval of the risk policy, the council accepts that the risk policy work group has completed all terms of reference as tasked by the council on June 8th, 2023, and the working group shall conclude its activities under the 2026 priorities and will not be reconvened unless directed by the council via the priority process.
Looking for a second on the motion. Ms. Braun. Rationale, Ms. Ware?
I think the presentation spoke for itself. So nothing further to add.
To the council, to the motion on the board. Mr. Pierdock.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It comes back to my question. The fact it will, if information comes forward into the future for these other species that don't have a sub-ACL, would then that we require that it be reconvened, or is there a different process that you can use, John, to square this way, to put it together? I'm just wondering how we can continue these discussions, try to get some criteria for these other species, and how that would be addressed.
Yeah, so I think in the case of changing questions and adjusting factors, that I think that really requires an FMAT approach. I think we would want to, it shouldn't be ad hoc. It really needs to be standing up a group. So I would think that you'd want the council to prioritize work around that question to make sure the resources get allocated to answer it. Because there's not going to be dedicated staff supporting the risk policy and making changes to these questions at this time with this motion, unless directed through the priority setting process.
No, thank you, Jonathan, for that. I just once again have my concerns with the timeliness of that, because that's going to take more time. But once again, in the interest of moving forward, I will support this, but do have my concerns. Thank you.
Ms. O'Dell.
Yep, so I'm going to support this motion. I look forward to seeing how this plays out. And I also just wanted to quickly note that I really appreciate the council defines stability in the following way on page 4 of document 3. I know we started out this process with discussions of transparency, stability, and have had workshops and various discussions, and I think that this language on page 4 is good. So thank you for putting that together for us.
Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, I'm going to support it. Now, you know, I was convoluting things together. I had listened to the dynamic reference points discussion for 2 days, and I'm like, how the hell are we going to do all this and know what we're doing when we come back next year? Are we going to be aware of, you know, right now we have the devil that we know, right? The devil that we know, but we know how to work within that system. We're going to be, have a whole new policy by 2028 for setting these things in place by the timeline between the dynamic reference points, the framework 68, this all together. So, but I'm going to continue to support it for now. So, all right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Alexander. I will go to the public, to the motion on the board in the room. Online, I have Attorney Etrie.
Hi, thank you. Libby Etrie, Conservation Law Foundation. CLF appreciates the extensive work that the Risk Policy Working Group has put into developing this new risk policy over the last 3 years. We do welcome the explicit attention to climate vulnerability and the cautious approach for high vulnerability and or high exposure species, given the fast changing conditions here in the region. Other councils, however, have risk policy approaches that only consider factors that ratchet down risk tolerance, similar to the way climate vulnerability works here. The risk policy concept here is unusual and perhaps a little bit risky in having some factors that go in both directions, such as spawning stock biomass and recruitment, where there is more risk tolerance when indicators are promising and there's just less risk tolerance when trends are declining. Further, two additional factors that would have acted to decrease risk tolerance: fish condition, which was visioned as a proxy for ecosystem conditions such as food availability and assessment uncertainty to account for things like strong uncertainty around projections that plagued many of our assessments, ultimately weren't included in this policy. We feel that that's unfortunate because both factors were highly relevant to the risk associated with the council's management decisions. We do appreciate that they were complicated, and we do understand why the subgroups elected to defer their incorporation, but they shouldn't be ignored in the future. Overall, we do appreciate the thoughtful approach the council took. However, since this is a novel and untested approach, and its application of the risk policy, as the application of the risk policy unfolds, we do urge the council to regularly revisit its outcomes and include in that revisiting, evaluating the value of expanding the factors used for future, within your future annual priority setting processes. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Ms. Etrie. Back to the council. Seeing none, I'm going to call the question. For those in favor of approving the motion on the board, please raise your hand and keep them up. Those opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you very much. The risk policy will be approved as is in the motion. Back to you, Mr. Paros. I believe there's another portion of the presentation.
There is another portion. We're going to add in a brief demo of the risk policy toolkit while I get a little organized and grab the folders on the back table to go through the weightings exercise. So Ms. Angelia Miller is going to take control of the screen and give council members a brief demonstration of the risk policy toolkit so you can have an understanding of what the plan teams will be using and what some of the outputs will be. So
thank you for that. Ms. Miller.
Good afternoon, council members. Angelia Miller, Marist Collaborative, consultant supporting the risk policy project. And as Mr. Paris provided a primer during his presentation, I'm going to walk through our risk policy toolkit, at least the overarching application that would be available to you all as council members, as well as stakeholders, SSC members, and others that would be interested in seeing the risk policy in application. So to begin, the toolkit is comprised of four different applications, two of which we'll go through tomorrow after you've completed your council weightings. And then the main one that we'll walk through today is this new NEFMC risk policy application. And so the way that this is set up, there are four main components. There is a user selection menu on your left-hand side, which you can collapse or expand to your preference. There is the main page, which will contain the matrix table once you select your inputs. There is the recommended probability page, which will include the Z-score data, including the scores from the PDTs, your average weights. And then there is the Z-score plot, which right now is defaulted to a standing plot with its stoplight colors, as Mr. Paris explained. And then there's the about page for further information about the application. So I'll walk through an example using Gulf of Maine Haddock. So we have inputted scoring data provided by Dr. Roger Brothers through his UMaine work for IRA1. So we'll select our action year this year of 2026. We will select our FMP, and then we'll select Gulf of Maine Haddock. The risk policy matrix will populate onto your main screen, including the information that you are familiar with, including assessment and uncertainty, biomass, recruitment, climate vulnerability, and your fishery characterizations. That would be input by the plan coordinators through one of the other applications. You can then move over to this recommended probability plot where you can see, or the Z-score data, where you can now see your five factors, the scores that the PDT would input, and in this case, Dr. Brothers provided, where he assumed two for the two fishery factors, and then the average weights, which right now are from your 2025 April mock exercise and will be replaced this evening with your weights that you decide on today. Then at the bottom here, there's the input value. So the application calculates your Z-score as 2.27 for Gulf of Maine based off of your average weights from last year and the score. And your Z-score plot plots that Z-score, which is indicated by the point here on the curve, and the resulting recommended probability, which you can see on the plot, but is also an output here on the text as 54.7, indicating a high risk tolerance, and that is also inputted here on the application. There is the ability to generate the report, as Mr. Paris provided, and you can click that generate report button. A PDF will download, which you can then open, and it will contain the same information that you are seeing in the dynamic application as a static report. So your risk policy matrix as the first two pages, your scores, average weight, the calculated Z-score and recommended probability, the resulting risk tolerance tier, and the Z-score plot. And so far right now we have additional examples provided by Dr. Brothers, including American Place. So you can see the scores here from his work and the assumed twos for the fishery factors, its resulting Z-score, and its recommended probability of 68.8. And again, you could generate that report It doesn't want to work because technology does that to me sometimes. And that's the application in essence.
Thank you for that, Ms. Miller. That is an awesome tool, and I thank you for the work that you did putting that together for us. Any questions on that tool? Ms. Griffin.
Yeah, just kudos. That's great. I'm really excited about this. On the action year, is that going to, as you move forward in time, will that drop down have all the years that have gone behind, been in the past? Sorry, that's horribly worded.
Yes, that's correct. The two applications, which I'll show tomorrow, you input the report year or the action in which development is occurring or specifications are being set, and then it saves to a cloud database that then is pulled into this application. So you'll only see the years once data has been provided by the plan coordinators in the other pieces of the toolkit.
Mr. Alexander.
Yeah, so I don't know who this question is from, maybe her, maybe you, somebody, anyway, but it's so will the SSC be using this tool when it's debating its, you know, how much the OFL should be?
The intent is that they're going to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, some other folks that are more smarter than me, they're going to be using these outputs. That risk policy matrix, the template that we have here, and also that Z-score picture with the red, yellow,
right.
Green, that's what they're going to be incorporating into their deliberations as they move forward right now under the qualitative approach.
Okay.
And I turn to Ms. Ware.
I was just kind of curious where it actually ends up going. So whether we use it, they use it. All right, thanks.
We're all going to use it. Any further? Sorry, Mr. Platts.
Yeah, thank you for that, Angelia. That's very impressive. So I have a question that goes to an input. So the numbers that get inputted, the conditions, I suppose, was what we'd call them, that gets done by the PDT? Is that correct?
Jonathan?
So there's two inputs. There's the scoring by the plan team that gets combined with the weighting provided by the council. For each factor.
Yeah, so that raises some real concerns. I have concerns about the PDTs. So there's a range of knowledge and ability in our PDTs, in my opinion, in my personal humble opinion. And that's a lot of power to aggregate in people that I don't think in all cases maybe it's a good idea. I had that just was like a huge red flag that went flying up for me based on my 22 years of fisheries management experience.
I think there's an answer.
I
appreciate it, but there's an answer here that may satisfy your concerns, and I'll turn to Dr. O'Keefe.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to turn it to Mr. Peros, and I'm going to ask him to please be as specific as possible of the location of where the information is for each factor and what data sources are used by the PDT for scoring. And if you can just refer us to the appendix number and where that's located. It's not just expert opinion. The working group has designed the factor scoring guidelines to be based on specific criteria and specific data sources, and it's consistent across all of the stocks. So it's not subjective. It's not. This is a very quantitative approach that we've taken. So it's not PDT by PDT. It's you'll see it in these appendices that I'm going to ask Mr. Peros to refer you to.
Sure. So this is in Appendix 1, our scoring instructions. It's on page 10 of the risk policy concept document. It'll go through each factor, and then for commercial and recreational, each question, and gives really specific guidance, probably more than the plan teams want to hear, really specific guidance about how to go through and score these. And so I think we wanted it to be replicable and transparent and could really be done by anyone who has access to a common set of information. So I think we early on, I think we thought about some of the points you made, Ted, and the way that we've set this up, I think is fairly prescriptive.
Mr. Platts, does that satisfy your concerns?
Somewhat. I mean, proof is in seeing and knowing, and so I'll borrow from a popular geopolitical phrase, I'll trust but verify. I'll wait and see. And
the documents are all online, so you can spend the time verifying on your own. I will go to Ms. O'Dell and then Ms. Moran.
So one quick recommendation in thinking about, because we just had the example of just, I know that this is just an example of Gulf of Maine Haddock for right now, but I still think that we need to do a little bit more work on the matrix describing the fishery. I've talked before about the importance for the groundfish docks for SSC members to understand like lease values or things like that. I think it would be important in the decision-making to understand the performance of the fishery and things like lease value to be for groundfish. And now we can get specific because we just had the Gulf of Maine Haddock example, but I think it would be important to, and that might be something we get from sector manager reports. If the quota change model is not adequate, maybe we think about changing the sector manager reports and getting a better understanding on what lease values were in some range in a given year. So anyway, so it's just my 2 cents if we're thinking about information for SSC. Thanks.
Oh, sorry, Ms. Miller.
Thanks, Jackie. Yeah, I'll just add that in last year's matrix, we did include that information. We do still plan to keep that information in there. It's not in this example currently, because I removed it while the working group was still working through those two things, but I am actively adding it back in as we speak. Yeah.
Thank you for that. Ms. Braun?
Thank you. And just to make you perhaps feel better, Ted, the way I understand this, so we're just putting the weights on there. They have a prescriptive process for doing their scores, which then gives us boundaries of where the risk could be. So they're not coming up with quotas. Like they're just setting the boundaries. That's why I feel much more comfortable when I think of it that way.
There's a little math behind scenes, but in essence, you do have a pretty good handle on how this will move forward. Where am I? Any further questions for Ms. Miller on the online tool that she's put together? Seeing none. I think we move back to you, Jonathan, for a brief introduction, not a brief, a final introduction on the waiting process that we're going to go through. I just want to point out that any questions you have about the waiting process, this is the time after Jonathan's presentation to go through. Ask your questions. We want to make sure that we have the public aware of all the questions. We've been advised by General Counsel to ensure that all questions are out there for the public to hear, because once we go to closed session, the only thing you're going to be doing is taking your sheet of paper and making X's, checks, or whatever, how you want to mark it, and that is it. So if there's some questions right now, Mr. Ehrstead?
Yep, thanks, Mr. Chair. So my question's really simple. Are we only waiting with whole number scores, i.e. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then not going to decimal places? Because if you don't put that in the ground rules, somebody's going to deviate. Thank you.
I think Jonathan will address that in his presentation moving forward.
And I'll say it now, whole numbers only. All right, great. So we've just got a couple of slides here, and I'll reiterate some points that you've heard multiple times now. This is your policy choice. This is your chance to be part of the risk policy. Only voting council members are going to participate. Your participation is compulsory, so everyone who is a voting council member is going to participate. You already agreed to that 2 years ago, so everyone's going to get a folder. Your weights are public records, but your name is not associated with your weight. That's why we have this numbering system. It's going to be done on paper. There's a little matrix, a little grid here, and like Dan said, all you have to do is check or put an X in the row underneath it within the appropriate column. So it's set up like a matrix. I have a picture of it on the next slide. I'll show that. When you're done, I want everyone to hand your weighting back into me. overnight we're going to compile and analyze the information, and we're going to share it back out with you tomorrow morning in preparation for a vote to approve the council's weights for use. So you can only weight two factors as critically important. You just agreed to that in your last vote. The weights are going to be averaged, and we can go through that tomorrow morning. And as I mentioned, there's only one matrix that you need to fill out. This is a global weighting exercise, so the weights that come out of this will be applied to all council managed resources. There's a couple of guiding questions in the on the weighting form. These haven't changed since you did this last year in April, but I'll read them. I think they're important to consider. Is there a factor that you feel should have the most influence on the council's decision making? And the other is, when you have made past decisions at the council, what has been the primary driver of whether you were willing to accept an option of higher or lower risk, and what had little influence on your decision? These links were intended for you to use last week, but we wanted to make sure that they were available. And so in terms of what happens next, we'll answer questions. We'll have a brief discussion here. The council will go into closed session. Tomorrow morning, we'll have another presentation that reveals what the weights are. There'll be a motion that comes up on the board. There'll be discussion. Angelia will be using the initial weights that come forward from the council, and we'll be doing a brief demonstration as well. Once a motion goes forward and approves a set of weights, those will be used to use the risk policy qualitatively in 2026. Any questions?
Questions on weighting? There you go. Mr. Hansen.
Looking at the ballot, could you define characterization again for the recreational fishery and the commercial fishery, just so I have it clear in my head?
Yes, and so if it were me, I would think about the five questions that we reviewed earlier in the concept. So we know it's not just a fleet of vessels, that it includes a community of folks, thinking about fishery performance. And so the idea for those, and I think, how did we phrase it here? I'll just read what you're going to see, is to consider how important commercial fishing considerations are to your risk tolerance for a managed species. And with the scoring process, you know what will go into that. And the same thing goes for the recreational considerations. How important recreational fishing considerations are to your risk tolerance for a managed species.
You seem
so... I'm still not clear.
Ms. Ware.
Yeah, I like to think of it as like the human aspect of fisheries management. So they have like the human on the commercial side, the human on the recreational side, the things that those are encompassing. So like the revenue that goes to a community or the community participation, those are the things that that factor is thinking about. So how do you weigh community or human aspects when you're making a decision? That's what those two are focused on.
Okay, that's a little more clear for me. Thank you.
Sure, no problem. Last opportunity. I think we're all ready to go. We're happy. We're ready to go and do some waiting. Ms. Ware.
Yeah, before we go to closed session, I just wanted to do some shout outs to everyone that worked on risk policy. And in particular, I would really like to thank two people. Angelia, thank you so much for all of your technical work on this. Your application really elevated the risk policy. It made us look really good. So thank you for all your work on that. And then Jonathan, thank you for taking this on. This is kind of the like not always fun part of fisheries management, and it's sticky and it's hard to get your hands around. So thank you for participating. I'm really proud of what we did, so thank you for that.
Thank you for that, Ms. Ware. With that, Before I actually adjourn the meeting here, I just wanted to do a reminder. We do have our sunset cruise today at 7 o'clock at the Stonington Dock, 1 High Street. Pretty easy address to remember. If not, come see me or someone else around here, and we'll get that squared away. Please carpool. We will be meeting back here tomorrow at 9 o'clock for Risk Policy Part 2. We'll get the results and see how this goes. With that, thank you very much to the public. If we can give about 5 minutes before we can get everyone back and do the waiting, and then you'll be able to go. So
just stay and do the waiting.
Well, we have to wait for the public to
He's
leave.
He's going
to
pass out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. So thank you very much, and we'll see you tomorrow at 9 a.m.